Hey Pistons fans, we have another exciting episode of Inside the Cylinder coming your way. Pretty excited about it. We are going to be having a couple of new guests on our show this episode. The first being Michael Snyder, Mike Snyder. He is a writer for DetroitBadBoys.com. You may have seen his work, High Low. He's one of our top video analysis writers on staff. Really smart basketball knowledge, you know, really understands the game in a different way. So we're extremely excited to be having him on today's episode to kind of give a fresh new look and a fresh new perspective into Pistons basketball. And yeah, maybe he's talking some stuff to come in the future as well. So certainly excited about that. Obviously, I'm here joined by my co-host, Joey Mack. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. Yeah, so we have another guest on this episode, Shamik Mohile. You can find his stuff on PistonsPowered.com. He's also an avid tweeter at ShamShamGod. You can find him there. So we dive into the similar Detroit Pistons topics with him as well. Have some pretty interesting stuff here. Some Henry Ellenson name drops. So some fresh takes, and we're excited to bring it to you. So enjoy.
Everyone, as promised, we are joined today by our guest Mike Snyder. He is a fellow Detroit Bad Boys writer, so you've probably seen him stuff before if you've ever checked out, you know, DetroitBadBoys.com, which I'm sure some of you have. Mike, what's up?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me.
Of course. Yeah, happy to have you here. Now, this is our second time. We kind of had a little recording error the first time around, so really do appreciate you kind of sticking with us because, you know, we're figuring it out too. So really do definitely appreciate that.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. You guys do a great job. I've listened to pretty much everyone that you or every podcast that you've put out. And no, it's good to be on here. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, no, well, we're excited to have you. I know, you know, this is actually you're the first Detroit Bad Boys writer that I've, you know, we've had on as a guest.
Hey, all right.
And honestly, the reason why I, you know, we have a lot of good writers on our staff. We have a lot of good, you know, guys that are kind of bringing different things to the game. One thing that I like about your stuff the most is, you know, I just love the way that you just pick apart the games. Like, I think your section that a lot of people might know Mike for is called High Low, and it's pretty much like our video analysis less like post game recaps. And you know, I think that work is awesome. Like, it teaches me a lot about the game, you know, just kind of, you know, lots of times it really kind of puts context to what it is that you're seeing, and you know that you're seeing every single
right.
day. So I think that that's kind of awesome. Did you grow up playing like basketball or organized hoops or?
Yeah. Through high school, I played basketball, still play today. 35 years old, get on the court probably two or three times a week. Definitely a shoot-first point guard. I'm looking out for myself first and foremost. But yeah, everything,
nice.
I'm pretty much the do as I say, not as I do type person. So, you know, when I complain about Reggie, it's, you know, I do it too, but, you know, it's not a big deal. Not as big a deal as when he does it.
Yeah, do you like, you know, as soon as you get the inbound pass, you like go through the legs the whole way up the floor, kind of like Reggie, and just kind of like truly just swag out before
exactly.
the play begins.
Those no possession Reggie, where he just brings it up, dribbles around, that's me. So
nice. Joe and I were talking about that. Yeah, obviously Joey Max here.
What's up,
Joe? What's going on?
What's up, Joey?
And we were talking about it, like, yeah. You know, Mike looks like he's a hooper. Like we feel like he's a hooper.
Well, it's interesting. You get a lot of I don't know. You get a lot of hoops heads, and you don't know if they actually play ball or if they're just like
right,
really
right.
really really big fans of the game and like sort of break it down from an analytics point of view. So it's interesting to kind of get a perspective on, you know, their actual playing style and how often they play and what have you.
Joe, what would you say your playing style is? I played with you before, obviously, but yeah, like, you just give it to the fans.
I would like to think of myself as sort of a, not a point forward, but I can play a little bit of point forward. I'd say I'm a three spot.
Point forward. No, I mean, you got handles. I'll give it to you.
Bring the ball on the floor, but I'll post up a little bit as well.
Yeah, you'll get down there. That's one thing I like about you. Nice.
What about you, Dave? A little 3-and-D?
Yeah, not really the D, like, you know, but like definitely like the if it's open, I'm shooting it. You know, I kind of call myself kind of like a KCP-ish, you know, I'll run around some screens, but I'm not going to get by a guy, that's for sure. I was actually watching the game, the Milwaukee Bucks game, which, you know, if you've been following along in Pistons land, you probably know. I mean, every single loss has been a pretty much one extra nail in the coffin. Even the win against the Brooklyn Nets, which was earlier this week, it seems like every team that the Pistons were vying against also won on that night, so it didn't really change the playoff odds. But this game against the Milwaukee Bucks in overtime really was the nail in the coffin. Like their percentage to make the playoffs probably dropped, you know, from 1.7% to make it in per ESPN's BPI to, it's probably something I haven't checked, but I assume it's under 1% now. Really, really not good. One thing I noticed in the game was, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had this moment of, he crossed up somebody. Like, he literally, like, just hit him with it once. It was just a really quick crossover, got into the lane, and I think he got to the rack. And in my mind, it was like, I haven't seen Kentavious Caldwell-Pope one-on-one, man up on a guy, hit him with a crossover, and get by him, like, almost all season. You know, he really does kind of have a pretty his game is not dynamic, although he is a great athlete.
It's dynamic because his handles aren't really dynamic. I think he second guesses his ball handling ability, and because it's kind of shaky, but I think if he could really tighten that up, I'd like to see him come back next year with more confidence in his handles. I think that would really bring a whole new element to his game.
Yeah, I completely agree. Now, Mike, one thing that we wanted to ask you was kind of getting into your background here, and not your background, but just more so your writings. One piece that you just had that came out on DetroitBadBoys.com earlier this week, it was titled 2016-17 Pistons Offense. Is Pistons personnel and scheme the right fit? Can you give us like a little background on the piece and, you know, what your thought process was going into that article and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, initially, it started out, I wanted to get a heads up on a playoff preview. So I was going to break down what they did. You know, these are the looks that they produce on a nightly basis. This is what to watch out for. This is, you know, when is something going to happen? This is what you need to watch. And then from there, they proceeded to lose, you know, 7 of 8. Pretty much any kind of playoff chances were out the door for the most part, for the, you know, reasonable part. So now, then I was stuck with all this tape, you know, cut up, you know, what they do, you know, what am I going to do with it now? So basically, I decided to kind of go back after they lost the 7 and 8, and, you know, why did they lose that 7 of 8? And more or less, is from everything I saw, obviously their offense was horrible. They've gone through long stretches of not scoring, not so much scoring. It's not even generating a good look. And I think that turned out to be, you know, the biggest reason, you know, why they hit that skid that they did. So from there, you know, just questions just started coming up. Obviously, this team was built around a Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond pick and roll. From there, everybody would kind of feed off and feast off. The defense is collapsing, helping out. And since that, at least from my perspective, that's probably not going to work out moving forward. That's debatable about Reggie's future or not, but I don't think it's going to work out moving forward. So then the question becomes, you have this team that's built around it, and if that's not going to be what's going, if that's not going to, if that's not going to work, then what is going to work? What's the plan with these players? how are they going to fix this? And that's kind of where I left it off. You know, Stan, what are we going to do from here?
So basically, is it a system thing or is it a personnel thing?
Yeah. Right, Yep, it's exactly. And Elite, that's a good question. Most of the sets, most of the plays that they run, you know, the end game of this set or of a singular play, you know, ended up being a tough contested, you know, 2-point shot. You know, it doesn't matter what they run, it always seemed to end that way, either with a pick and pop with Lure hitting it or Harris, Morris. You know, all these plays, all these sets, the end game was a long two or at the very least a contested two. And since that's, you know, not too feasible in today's NBA and the Reggie Jackson Drummond pairing isn't working, you know, what's the plan here, guys? What are we doing moving forward?
And also, one of the things that you kind of know about Stan Van Gundy coming in, he was sort of like the one in, five out kind of system of, you know, you get a big, you know, dominant center in right. what he had in Dwight Howard, and you surround him with shooting. And that has been, it's not like the Pistons don't know that they need shooting. It's not like it's not like those aren't the players that you're trying to, you know, lure in free agency. And, you know, speaking of Lure, John Lure, you know, he was kind of brought in to be a stretch four, not only for the defensive purposes of, you know, being able to stick a guy like Kevin Love, but also to actually stretch the floor. And what we've seen this season is, you know, absolute tentativeness when it comes to actually shooting. He's lost all confidence in that shot.
Right.
He's lost all confidence in long range twos. So he's more so of a liability than anything else on the floor. So you kind of start to question, you know, the DNA in its entirety, not only of are these players the right people, but like, what is Stan Van Gundy trying to do? And he clearly, it just doesn't seem like he has the right pieces on the floor right now to accomplish that by any means.
Exactly. And when you brought up the one in, four out thing with Dwight Howard, you know, you can think what you want about Dwight Howard, but he demanded a lot of attention when he was in Orlando. He would get triple team or double team, triple team. I mean, there's plays that I looked at where he had the attention of all five players on the court. And with Drummond, that's not the case. When he gets it in the post, the other team wants him to shoot because they know it's a lose-lose scenario for the Pistons. So the whole one in, four out, I mean, that was pretty much doomed from the beginning because he just does not draw the same attention that Dwight does. He's not, at least as of today, not that very good of a passer out of the post. So it's like that whole thing didn't work before it even started.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. They're not the same player. They're both young, strong centers. They're both, right. You know, they have similar elements to their game. I mean, one thing that people have knocked on Dwight has been, you know, that he never really did turn into that, you know, truly developed post game, but he was a bit more of an issue on the offensive side, just being a menace down low and like bodying up guys. And really, I mean, not that Andre can't do that, not that Andre doesn't do that, but lots of times, like you said, when he is there in the post, you don't see a double team. You really kind of hope, because his decision making, and I wrote a pretty long piece about this last season, was just, it's just not really there. I mean, I think at the time when I was writing last year, and I don't think his numbers have improved dramatically. On about, I think it was 88 to 89% of the time that the ball was dumped down to Andre Drummond in the post, a shot was going up. So he didn't even have the wherewithal to pass out of it, even if he was getting pressure coming from it. He kind of already makes up his mind.
Right.
And then in that piece, you had a funny part or a funny little section in there. I think it was called like the... It was called like the zero chance hook shot or something like that. And very clear and so very reminiscent of times where Andre Drummond is, you know, he has the ball and he's already decided. And when he's taking this particular hook shot that you have isolated, he's about 12 feet away from the basket and his right hand is actually behind the basket when the shot goes up. And it's like, how many times have we seen that where it's just like, yeah, you know, Andre, you do have a little bit of a right and a left when you're about 6 feet away from the basket, but you really shouldn't be shooting any shots that are any further away from there.
Right, and that's where the whole self-awareness comes into play. It's like, yeah, I mean, you can get away with it when you're closer to the basket, but when you start doing that, when you're out of the paint, I mean, the chances of making it go lower substantially. And obviously, he's still very young. He's 23, 24 years old. So there's time to mature. But, I mean, this is the third year where Stan Van Gundy has made a point to, you know, feed him in the post and try to get him going. And, I mean, he's definitely been better than he was 3 years ago. But it's still nothing you can base an offense around.
I would also like to point out, comparing sort of in the Dwight Howard to Andre Drummond comparison, I think that Dwight Howard sets really, really good picks, and I think that that can change an offense substantially. And one thing that Andre struggled with a little bit is if he's really going to set a hard pick or if he's just going to set a lousy pick, that doesn't really do anything. And I think that Dwight Howard was just right. kind of a menace throwing his body around for those Orlando Magic teams, and it got a lot of guys open. Which kind of brings me, I guess, sort of to another point regarding this offense in comparison to those Magic teams. You know, with the shooters, like Andre Drummond isn't Dwight, and Marcus Morris and Tobias Harris, they aren't Turkoglu and Rashard Lewis. They're just completely different players. And, you know, the reason why, you know, Stan Van Gundy ended up with that four out, one in sort of offensive setup is due to injuries, and it was by accident, right? And then he had these guys, you know, just place Rashard Lewis as the four, who was just an absolute spot up shooter, which right. Tobias Harris isn't. Like, he needs to get a little penetration into the paint, which clogs things up for Andre Drummond. So, you know, everything is just different, and it's just unfortunate that they haven't been able to figure it out at this point.
And also, just to kind of circle to kind of reinforce that. One thing that a lot of people do when you ask, you know, what the hell is going on in Detroit? What's wrong with this team? One thing that's kind of glaring is that Ish Smith is Detroit's best three-point shooter at 36.5%, something like that. Like, that is not a recipe for success when your best statistical three-point shooter on, you know, the amount of shots that are necessary to be qualified for that mark is a guy that, A, doesn't want to shoot it from there, and B, has never been known to be that type of shooter. You know, we did have a pretty hot KCP for a minute there, you know, where he was at the 40% mark from three, but that has plummeted ever since then. So, you know, it's very clear that the spacing issue still has been the biggest issue. I mean, it's the biggest issue in the NBA. That's what you want is space, but these athletes are so good at clogging up lanes and right. kind of, you know, Reggie's not able to get into the paint. It just, everything has gone wrong in the sense of that the spacing has still not been addressed, or not addressed, but it just hasn't been, it's just not there for Detroit.
Exactly, and you can hide, well, maybe you can't even do that. I mean, you can try to hide one non-shooter on the floor, but when you start getting into, you know, hiding two or three non-shooters on the floor, when your whole offense is, you know, trying to be based around a pick and roll or, you know, whatever, you know, a Dre post-up, you can't hide those people, and that's when the offense becomes stagnant. That's when, you know, Marcus Morris, Tobias Harris resort back to their ISO roles, and that's where the Pistons start having troubles.
Yeah, and now I just wanted to kind of to reinforce kind of what you were saying in the beginning of this. Like, you were, and so were we, you know, early March, we were thinking, like, all right, like, clearly better than the Bulls. You know, kind of worried about the Heat, but, you know, they're still on the periphery and still ahead of the Bucks. So, you know, you were kind of thinking as a Pistons fan and someone that follows the team that, all right, what seed? Like, can we get to six?
Right.
Like, is there a possibility to get up to six and get, you know, a Wizards or, you know, I guess at that time, like a Boston team? Since then, so just for the month of March, I just pulled up the Pistons stats. In offensive rating, they are ranked 28th at 101 points per 100 possessions. And they are dead last in shooting in true shooting percentage at 49.5. They are dead last in effective field goal percentage at 46.9%. You know, it's just been bad. I think they're 28th in points per game. the month of March, which I looked up prior to, which really kind of had me going into, you know, Pistons in the playoff, which seed. Pistons had the easiest schedule in the entire NBA from the beginning of March throughout the rest of the season. And then the wheels fell off in a way that I've honestly never seen before, at least for a team that I've followed very closely. And that's in any sport. You know, I haven't seen that from a Tigers team or a Red Wings team. You don't necessarily see, I guess the Lions are the Lions. So, I mean, that's a different category, and it's all on its own. But the way it's been really remarkable in a bad way, and in the sense that the wheels have completely fallen off.
Yeah, I think it was a really good February too. That was the thing. We played really well in February, and like nothing significant happened from an injury standpoint. Obviously, Reggie is Reggie, and we don't know where his conditioning's at and his knee's at. So we had to play him less minutes. But, I mean, we had the same guys. We were rolling out there after playing really well in February. And then I think that just speaks to the fact that it's a really young team and we had a couple bad losses and just really couldn't mentally bounce back from it. And who knows if that's the team or Stan Van Gundy. Again, there's, like, so many questions in terms of is it the system? Is it the players? Is it both? And how do you address those issues? And, you know, have a competitive squad coming into next year, because obviously we're not making the playoffs this year. Michael, do you have any thoughts on sort of, you know, where this team should move, like what direction it should move at this point? Obviously we're looking sort of into the off season right now. You know, are there certain like significant moves that you think that should be made that makes sense that would help them moving forward?
And also, there is a big looming KCP contract question coming up as well. So yeah, Maybe your thoughts on that too.
Right. Well, obviously very good questions. At least what I think moving forward, they have to solve the Reggie Jackson problem. And I think, just in my own personal opinion, based on what happened this year, based on how Stan Van Gundy, treated the whole situation, I just can't see Reggie Jackson in a Pistons uniform when they're a contender. So they have to address that. I don't want to say elephant in the room, but it's not going anywhere. He's under contract for 3 more years. $50 million, I think, is still on the table. So that's the first question they have to answer. What are they going to do with him? I guess my biggest beef, kind of staying on the topic with Stan and how he handled it this year, is when Reggie came back, they were, I think, 11-10. By all means, right around 500. The season is still, there were still, 60 games left. The season wasn't over. They weren't 5-15. They didn't need a savior. So I don't understand why they rushed him back. And then second of all, this past week, Stan has been mentioning that, Reggie's been only 80%. He was a shell of his former self. So then why is he playing? Why did you bring him back so early when they were, treading water? So I think he's just trying to put on a front as far as Stan Van Gundy, saying, you know what, it's not Reggie's fault. He was only 80%. When in reality, then why was he out there? There was no point of rushing him back. So I don't understand that. Then I don't understand the whole timing of the benching. Really, I don't like how he handled the situation, and I know it's not the end-all, be-all, but that's first and foremost. They have to figure out what they're going to do with Reggie Jackson. As far as signing KCP, which is obviously a huge question going into the summer, maybe figuring out what they're going to do with Reggie Jackson would help figuring out what they're doing with KCP. If they can unload that $15 million a year contract, it'd be a lot easier to re-sign KCP. So that's obviously a huge question. I think moving forward, if you ask anybody, name two or three players that you can build this team around, I think KCP is going to show up in a lot of that, a lot of those answers.
And also just to kind of, obviously we have a Reggie Jackson problem. We've talked about this a bit on the last podcast too. So with that being said, he's going to be difficult to unload for a variety of reasons. So, the first might be, look how he played this season. The second would be, recurring knee issues. This isn't something that's brand new. It's not like he has a torn ACL, but it's something that's chronic, which can still be, really bad moving forward. And then third, he's not the kind of guy that likes to come off the bench. You know, he clearly wants to be Mr., Hall of Famer and starting point guard. You know, he thought he was the starting point guard when Russell Westbrook was on the team. So right. Those are three major concerns. So with that being said, what would you be willing, and I don't think that there's going to be a team that's going to be picking him up straight. Like, I think there's two to three different scenarios. A team has a player on a massive contract who they completely don't see moving forward, and they're willing to take a risk on a guy like Reggie Jackson. Like Sacramento with Rudy Gay, they have a massive contract for one season. He's got a torn Achilles, unloading that and getting Reggie and seeing what you have. Another scenario would be, or maybe only two scenarios. And then you're trading Reggie Jackson paired with, either a Henry Ellenson or paired with a pick, just to get him off your books. And then you get whatever you get in return. What do you see? Where do you think that his value's at, and how difficult do you think it will be for the Pistons to actually unload him? Reggie Jackson, that is.
Yeah. Well, where his value's at is probably the lowest in his career. He's not young enough to say his best days are ahead of him. And he now obviously has this chronic knee injury. And like you said, it wasn't an acute injury. It's not something, an ACL where you rehab and you're back in a year, year and a half. This is something I believe he's been dealing with since his college days, so I don't think it's going anywhere. His value, like I said, it's probably the lowest it's going to be. So expecting value or even equal value in return, that's probably not going to happen. It's going to be an interesting summer. It brings up a lot of different questions. And I think it all goes back to, how do you want to play moving forward? You know, what are you looking for in a point guard? Once you answer that, then you can put your options on the table.
Would you be willing to trade him in a first round pick just to get him off the books? Isn't that kind of what we're looking at now?
That is probably, honestly, when anytime you answer just to get him off the books, it's never a good thing. Right. But it's probably, honestly, that's just to get him off the books is probably your only move.
That's scary.
I know.
And it does kind of go back to the point where the situation was mismanaged on three different fronts. You know, if he wasn't ready, why is he out there? You know, when he's not out there, he's not performing well, so he didn't help the team, one. Two, you might have hurt him in his actual health moving forward. You know, his ability to rest on that knee and to give it the amount of time that's needed to where he might be able to come back at 100% and give us a season like the 2015-2016 season when he was a fringe all-star. So right. you hurt that ability because he didn't rest as much as he should. And three, you just literally just butchered his trade value to the point where, you know, he's sadly kind of like a laughingstock amongst, you know, the NBA and NBA circles.
Exactly.
And so you really, and you've hurt his confidence too. So there's, you know, three to four different elements where the situation was completely mismanaged. And we had another, you know, you picked up a third string point guard this season at the very end. You know, you didn't sign Ray McCollum, who was going to be your cheap option. You picked up Beno Udrih with like 2 days before the season started because you needed three point guards, you know, essentially just because of the Reggie Jackson issue to begin with. And you clearly didn't think that that was the route worth going to. And if you did, the Pistons might be in the playoffs. So,
yeah,
really, really bad stuff. All right, Mike, one last question and we'll get you out of here. You mentioned it just a second ago. We were going to ask you that. So we ran a poll on Inside the Cylinder asking a question. You know, if you had three Pistons to select moving forward as the sort of cornerstone of the organization, who would they be and why?
That, you know what, I think I saw that poll, and it's probably why I brought it up, because subconsciously it was still in my head there. But three Pistons, I would go Dre, KCP, and probably Tobias Harris. Dre, only because, well, I shouldn't say only, but he's still young, 23 years old. His best days are still ahead of him. I think you would want to obviously see a much improved defensive end or a defensive player out of him, a more efficient offensive player. Inefficient, I mean, he's shooting, what, 55%, 50, in the 50s. So on the, just looking at that, I mean, that's not horrible, but it could just be so much better. I think when you look at somebody like DeAndre Jordan, that's another person that he gets compared to a lot. The Clippers don't run plays for Jordan. They don't try to post him up. They don't try to do anything like that. They just let him do what he does. Rim run, set picks, block, block shots, rebound. That should be Dre's goal. And I think it's definitely doable as long as everybody's realistic on what he can do. And if that's the case, he's definitely part of the future, and he can definitely be someone who you can not necessarily build a team around, but he can help. KCP, the other person, or the second person of the three you've asked, defensively, I think still his contributions on offense keep getting better with each off season. Obviously, a little bit better of a ball handler would be nice, but again, he's still growing, he's still learning. It's something you can build. It's something you could use. It's a usable talent what he has. And then Tobias Harris, right now he's your best scorer. He's the most consistent player, most consistent offensive player. And again, these guys are all in the same age-ish area. And I think it's definitely, I mean, you don't have to squint hard to kind of see what they bring to the table. And, you know, if they meet their ceiling, those guys are contenders. They can play.
That's a good way of putting it. You don't have to squint hard. You can see the skeleton of a team here.
Exactly.
Now, they look like skeletons when they're on the floor sometimes, especially with this season. But, no, you really can see building blocks and solid players. So, no, I mean, that's all I have for you, Micho. Did you have anything?
No, that's about it.
Well, Mike, thanks again for hopping on with us. Really liked having you on. We'll definitely have you on again. Where can they find you on Detroit Bad Boys? What's your username? Where should they keep an eye out for some of your work?
So SB Nation, Detroit Bad Boys. MoFat1's a username. Don't ask about that. I didn't plan on using that, but it just kind of ended up working out that way. And it's too late in the game to change it now, I guess. But SB Nation, it's a great site. If you haven't checked it out, there's a lot of talented people there, writers behind the scenes. They really do a great job.
Well, no, yeah, definitely. And you're definitely one of them. So thanks again. And, we will, we'll talk again soon and hopefully, talk about some brighter days ahead of us. So,
agreed.
Definitely, definitely excited. All right. Take awesome. Care, man.
Thanks, Cheers. Guys.
Bye.
Bye.
And now a quick word from our sponsor. Do you play daily fantasy? If so, you should be playing on draft. Get this. Your chances of winning on draft are almost 3 times better than on FanDuel or DraftKings. The data shows almost 90% of players lose on DraftKings. On FanDuel, over 40% of the money goes to just 1% of the players. If you're not a pro and not spending hours a day on fantasy, you should be playing on draft. You'll win more often. It's statistically proven. On draft, you do a simple snake draft, just like at the beginning of your season-long league. You can do drafts whenever you want. They last for just 1 day, and they take only minutes to complete. Join me. Download Draft now. Just search Draft in the App Store, and it will come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code ALMIGHTY100 when you download, and you will get a 100% bonus when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store and be sure to enter the promo code ALMIGHTY100. That's ALMIGHTY100. Now back to David and Joey for some Pistons basketball. All right, guys, moving forward to another guest here. We have Shamik from the Pistons Powered. Going to be talking some more Pistons hoops, obviously, here. What's up, Shamik?
Hey, guys, not much. Glad to be on the pod.
Glad to have
Where
you.
Where can they find your stuff, Shamik?
You can find my writings at pistonpower.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter, ShamShamGod. And I'm a pretty good follow. I tweet, during the games, after the games. I'm pretty entertaining.
He's funny.
So, yeah.
He's a good follow. So the ShamShamGod, Would you say that the Sham God is like in the repertoire of your like your pickup game? Is that like something that you hit him with like on a regular basis?
Oh yeah, and then also my double crossover step back three. It's all part of the game, you know.
I'm not sure how tall you are, but if you were to say like if you were like the 6'2", 6'3" threshold, you'd be in the league. Is it that kind of scenario?
Oh, I'm only 5'5". If I was 5'7", I'd be in the league.
With those handles.
That is awesome for sure. The next Isaiah Thomas. No, but we're really excited to have Shamik Mohile. Just for the full intro. You know, I followed his stuff on Pistons Powered. Although they are the Detroit Bad Boys' arch nemesis, I think we're all here for the greater good. And yeah, we're gonna be talking some Pistons woes, some next steps. You know, some of the stuff that's on everyone's mind. Especially with the way that the month of March has gone, a month where my birthday falls in. So, you know, they haven't been too nice to me, you know, since my birthday, but, it is what it is. Yeah, Joe, what do we got on the slate? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, we're just going to talk the current state of the Pistons, and obviously we're not making the playoffs this year. So, what sort of changes are going to be necessary to be competitive next year? So I guess with that, I mean, we all know that we haven't been playing well and there's been a lot of changes being made. Shamik, in terms of the off season, I mean, obviously I think we have a big elephant in the room with in terms of Reggie Jackson and what we do with him. And I think that changes the entire scope of this team. So what do you think exactly, and that kind of ties into KZP as well, in terms of potentially signing him. What would you like to see the Pistons do regarding our two starting guards that will, you know, put us in a better position next year to be competitive?
Well, I think the first thing that needs to happen is you need to max out KCP. Bring him back. He's extremely difficult to replace. His defensive ability is elite or near elite, and he's only like 24 years old, which means he's still 4 or 5 years away from his prime. And you know, those kind of guys are a dime a dozen. You don't find those guys very often. And I know a lot of fans are, you know, they don't like his shot selection and the fact that he takes a lot of shots and he misses a lot of key jumpers and whatever. But, and also he gets compared to the guy that the Pistons passed up, which was, CJ McCollum. And CJ McCollum is a all-star and he's an offensive, you know, juggernaut, but I think KCP's defense is leaps and bounds ahead of where CJ is defensively. So I think if you give KCP time, I feel like he'll get more consistent, you know, as time goes by, as he refines his shot, as he learns how to come off of screens, similar to how Rip Hamilton did when he was a Piston. So yeah, I would max him out. If that requires going into the luxury tax, so be it. I think it's worth it.
Real quick follow-up question. You talked about some of the things that you think that he needs to work on and get better at for next year. Is there anything specifically? Like, me personally, I think he just needs to really get more confident in his handles, so that he can take guys off the dribble. Because it's we're seeing improvement there. But I think if he can really develop confidence in his crossover, that would really take his game to the next level. Is there anything specifically for you that you'd like to see him, you know, take another leap at? Obviously, shooting, we always want, you know, we want him to be more consistent with that. But, you know, anything that stands out for you there?
Well, I mean, that is like a huge part of it. Like the shooting ability, being able to be that knockdown shooter. If he's open on the wing, it should be money for him. I mean, for a guy who's, you know, he could legitimately be one of the best 3-and-D players if he was more consistent with his shot. So that's probably the biggest thing he needs to work on. Yeah, his handles need to be, you know, refined a bit. And also, I would like to see him finish at the rim a little bit better. Sometimes I see him lay it up. It gets blocked sometimes. But he has the ability to just dunk on people and be aggressive at the rim, and I don't see enough of that. I saw a little bit of that when he was a rookie and maybe a sophomore year too, but since then he's kind of, you know, fallen off of that.
He's come up short on a couple finger rolls too. I've seen 6 or 7 of those this year where he comes in hard to the paint and just kind of comes up really short on a finger roll. So I agree with you. If you can get more aggressive there in the paint, I think that'd be huge.
One thing that I've noticed about his game is he's probably, I would say he's maybe, I think he's our best non-point guard and better than Reggie Jackson too on the break. I think he is super confident at going full speed and finishing with the jam when he's on his own, and you know, kind of doing the 1-2 dribble when a guy might be on his hip to get right by him. He's definitely one of our fastest players on the team, so I definitely agree that, you know, that it's kind of strange that you can kind of have that ability with the rock in your hands when you're going 100 miles an hour and be able to finish really effectively, but you don't necessarily have the confidence to kind of add a secondary element to your game when it comes to driving to the hole, and being able to kind of, you know, be a little bit more, not necessarily hitting it every time, but just kind of putting yourself out there a little bit more and getting to the line a bit more, a la, like, you know, not, I don't want to like start, you know, quoting all these players like this is who he is, but like, you know, like a James Harden of sorts, or you know, Steph Curry, you know, even Klay Thompson gets to the line a lot more than Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Jimmy Butler, from a shooting guard perspective.
I mean, I mean, even at that point, like, I'm not saying that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope will ever be Jimmy Butler or James Harden in the sense, because both those guys live at the line. They make a lot of their bread just by, you know, 9 points a game coming from the stripe. So I'm not necessarily thinking that, but even if you could get to the line 4 times a game, that would be huge for the Pistons, because they're the team that gets to that area, it gets to the line the least in the league. So I definitely agree that getting to the rack should be something that he can, you know, kind of take next steps with. And I don't necessarily know how you do that in the off season. I think it's just something where, you know, you got to work.
Well, I think that ties into everything else. Like, if he does
with the dribble.
Yeah, if he improves his handles and he can get by guys a little bit easier, then I think that he can get into the lane and be more confident sort of creating contact and going from there. But in terms of re-signing KCP, I think it's pretty obvious right now that we're going to have to unload a contract on this team. I don't think you don't want to go into luxury tax as a team that's on the outside of the playoffs looking in. And so, you know, Shamik, what I think the guy that is viewed as the player that kind of has to go at this point is Reggie Jackson for a lot of different reasons. Where does your opinion stand on that? Do you see us definitely unloading him? And in what way do you think that might need to happen? Do you think that we trade him for basically nothing? Do you think that we have to sweeten up the deal with another player? And would you be happy doing that as well? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't really want to move on from Reggie just yet. I think he could get back to his 2015-16 form.
Unpopular opinion.
Pretty easily. Yeah.
I like it.
But
wait,
I mean,
what's that opinion like in Piston Powered Land? Are you one of the few guys? Were you one of the champions of the cause, or is that something that is widely believed amongst the writers there?
I think it's a general consensus that we want Reggie to come back healthy over there. I mean, there are a few writers and a lot of fans who believe that if you move him, you know, it'll be better for the greater good of the team. Like, it'll be good for the future. We can get some assets. But at this point, after this season, I don't know what you'd really get back for him. I mean, if you were to move on from him, you'd get pennies on the dollar for him right now. And not to say that we shouldn't move on from him in the offseason, but if I'd rather see him come back healthy than to give him away for a few second rounders or for, you know, just nothing, you know.
We just had a conversation about this, and we are in the boat that we're going to have to trade a first round or second round pick or a Henry Ellenson with Reggie Jackson to get him off the books. I don't necessarily see an avenue where, I mean, a team must really have to love him. It has to be like, there has to be one or two GMs in the league that really feel a certain way about Reggie Jackson.
Looking at the Kings and the Magic, and that's pretty much it, really.
Yeah, but like, and when I say looking at the Kings, I think we're looking at the Kings in the sense of, where are their needs? Are they stupid? you know, looking at like these types of things. But there wasn't really too much news about the Kings actually targeting Reggie Jackson during the trade deadline. Obviously, they had bigger fish to fry with unloading DeMarcus Cousins, but you did hear about Orlando. You did, like, mm-hmm. that was kind of the main boat where you heard some clamoring that a deal could be done. So, I mean, I don't necessarily know if that's still the case, though, with the way that the month
things
of March
have only
went.
Gotten and worse with Reggie Jackson.
And also the way that Sam Van Gundy has benched him, it almost to me it seems more so like, oh shoot, like I already killed his trade value, I don't want to kill it anymore. Let me just, you know, do this right now and hopefully people don't think too much about it. I don't know. What are your thoughts on all that, Shamik?
And I mean, I don't see the benching as like more of, oh, like we're moving on from you as a point guard for the Pistons, we're going to move you. I see it more of just like, hey, what's the point of, you know, aggravating this knee for whatever 4 or 5 extra games if we're not going to make the playoffs anyways, or even if we do, we're going to get bounced in the first round. So I feel like this shutdown is you know, it's to help him get healthy. It gives him an extra week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks to really rehab, recover. And then with like what the nature of this injury is such that, you know, it's a chronic issue. It's not ever going to go away for him. The only thing that can make it better is rehab and rest. And I would rather see him get an entire off season of rest, rehab, and then come back hopefully to form in 2015-16. And I think his future needs to be evaluated during the course of next season, not what he did this season.
I have a follow-up question to that. So if we sign KCP, probably to a max contract, Tobias Harris is on the books for $18 million a year, Andre Drummond is fully maxed out, and then you have Reggie Jackson for $15 million a year. So if you do bring him back, then we're basically in the luxury tax at that point, right? And do you think that basically a healthy Reggie Jackson and the rest of our starters and our bench mob is the team that you want to see just again in 2017-2018 that you think can be competitive and actually make a real run for that 4 seed?
Yes. Short answer, yes.
Yes, you do.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's worth it to pay the luxury tax, bring the whole starting 5 back. If Aaron Baines ends up leaving, I think that would save a little bit of money for us. He's in a player option, I think. So there's a spot where we could save money. And I'm not a cap expert in no means, but I feel like bringing that same starting 5 back is really going to be good for next year with the chemistry. And if he returns to form, I see this team as a top 5 team in the East. Because he's so important to the entire offense. Everybody else kind of goes as he, you know, as he plays.
Yeah,
and I think there's kind of two sides to that one. So, you know, it could be because his usage rate is so high that, of course, that's what we're going to think, is that he the team goes as far as Reggie goes. I think that the way that it was kind of managed with minutes, with Ish Smith, with starting lineups this season was really, it was just so... it was so up in the air from game to game that it was really hard for anyone on the team to have any sense of rhythm, even if you were Andre Drummond and you were always in the starting lineup. I just feel like who's at the helm, who's, you know, who's on my right side, who's on my left side, in the forward slots, you know, all that kind of stuff really didn't lead to a very harmonious type of season. But at the same time, Reggie Jackson, yes, it might be a case, and I've always thought that it was, you know, Reggie Jackson takes this team as far as they can go, but I think that we've seen an emergence in Tobias Harris. I think that we've seen some really good stuff out of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to where it might be a team where you can actually just kind of facilitate with your forwards, you know, hopefully have Dre sort of refine his shot selection a little bit more and get a real, like, facilitating point guard, where before I didn't think that at all. Now I'm kind of starting to think, well, maybe, you know, we just got to see what we have in some of these other guys and give them more shots. Like, I think KCP needs more than 9 shots a game, for sure. You know, I think he needs to be up there in, like, the 16, 17 shots a game type of realm to see what we really have in him. But, you know, I would say that that's kind of a part of it, for me at least, where, you know, I'm kind of – I don't necessarily know if Reggie is that important for the ceiling of this team, where you might be able to kind of supplement with other pieces. I don't know, that's just me, just because I've seen some good stuff out of some of the other guys this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to analyze that because no one really knows. Like, we know, we remember the healthy Reggie Jackson and how much different our offense was when he was healthy, and how much that changes our offense. A lot less, you know, Marcus Morris ISOs to try to, like, get back in the ball game late in the fourth quarter. Like, Reggie actually brought... I mean, he was our whole offense. Like, it was
he was Mr. Fourth Quarter.
It was
for sure.
It was centered around him. He could get us points that nobody else can get us in dire situations. So, you know, there's those nice memories of him, but then there's also these deep, dark memories of, like, the corpse of Reggie Jackson out there trying to compete and play. So I think it's anybody's guess, really, like, how he returns to form. Obviously, Shamik, you feel confident that he's going to be able, with rest and I don't know, relaxation, be able to come back next year true to form. And I think if that is the case, a lot of people would probably agree with you, you know, because of the what he brings to the table for us, and you know, his offensive abilities. So I guess we'll see. It's hard to really guess with this chronic knee issue. Like, you know, Michael has discussed, it's not an acute injury. It's not something that, you know, you stay off the floor for 3 months and then you'll completely rehab it and then you'll be good to go. This is something he's dealt with for a while. So It's really anyone's guess. You know, we'll see. One thing I did want to talk about, Shamik, I know you have a strong opinion on Andre Drummond, and I wanted to kind of get into that a little bit. Obviously, he's a big piece to the puzzle. Obviously, there's a lot of weak spots, but obviously, he has a lot of significant strengths that, you know, there's maybe two or three guys in the league that have. What are the things that you would like to see him work on in the offseason, and to kind of tweak his game on the offensive and the defensive side? And do you see him as a Piston, you know, for the next 5 or 6 years?
Well, there's kind of two sides to the offense of Andre Drummond. One is the plays that Stan Van Gundy runs for him, which is a problem in itself. I think that he's being used a little bit incorrectly. I think he's being force-fed in the post a lot, and especially early in the game. The possessions seem to begin and end with him, and I'm not sure I'm a big fan of that, especially with, you know, he doesn't really pass out of the post either, so it's just an end to the possession. And the offense is a little bit, for lack of a better word, like, constipated when he gets the ball in the post.
That's a great word for it, actually. Just kind of in general, the offense these days.
Yeah, I mean, like, you just see everybody else around him just standing around because they know the possession ends after that. So, yeah, I mean,
they literally stand. Like, it's literally, yeah, like, they dump it down, and then you see, like two guards and two forwards on the outside of the three-point line just not even cutting because they know they're not going to get the ball. Yeah,
and then Stanley Johnson with his hands up in the corner. We've all seen that.
Yeah, wide open.
Yeah. So that's one thing. And I also think he forces some of the post moves. Like, sometimes he'll catch the ball, like, outside of the paint in the post and still try and shoot the ball. And, you know, that's something I'd like to see him work on, is just learn how to pass out of it, learn how to, you know, see, like, know what's a good shot and what's not. And I think that really comes with just experience. I think this is the first year, or maybe last 2 years, where he's really been used in the post like that. But more so, I would like to see him be the better version of DeAndre Jordan, where he just roams around, sets picks for his guards or forwards, whoever has the ball, and then after setting that pick, just dive to the rim. The defender is going to have to make a choice, either stay on one of our shooters or go to him and leave the KCP or Tobias or Reggie Jackson open for a three or a mid-range jumper. And also, after they do shoot, he can just put the ball back at an elite level. So I don't know why he doesn't capitalize on those strengths that he already has. I guess that's more of an issue with Stan Van Gundy than it is for Andre. I don't think he you know, wants to be in the post that much. I think Stan kind of forces that.
I think Dre wants it. I don't know if he demands it. I don't know if it's something where it's like dunk, or sorry, where it's like I don't know why I was gonna say Tim Duncan, but I meant Dwight Howard. I don't know why it's something where it's something like that. He is, you know, really kind of clapping for the ball, really wanting to see it, really being a voice in the locker room. Now, that's not something that, that we have our pulse on, but it does seem strange the amount that, that it is clearly force-fed to Andre. And, you know, I have the same qualms with it, too. You know, I really don't. I don't know why you need, and we can talk about the fact that, you know, it comes with time, it comes with understanding where you're on at the floor. But if you're Andre Drummond and you're shooting, you know, four times a game or six or five times a game where you're clearly outside of the post and you're like almost in the mid post at this time and you're throwing up a hook shot, why does it take you, you know, a whole season to understand that that's not a good shot? Where if I'm on the floor as a, you know, a crappy pickup player, you know, and I force a jumper and I know it's a dumb shot, I know it's a dumb shot right then. I don't need to do it five more times to understand that I should probably pass. So I don't really, I mean, that's something that, that worries me about this team is just their overall basketball IQ seems to be a little bit more limited than some of the other teams that you see. At least some of the playoff teams, at least. But you know, I think that's something that, that I'm definitely concerned about because it is an offense killer. It really is kind of something where you just see guys standing, and that's one thing that this team can't take any. They can't afford to have more guys standing around watching offense happen and not being a part of it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the general consensus that we'd like to see him improve on his strengths as opposed to spending too much time trying to develop his weaknesses, because he has so much value. He does have a lot of value on offense. His ability to rim run, get boards, just be a big body, and you know, just kind of create general chaos. Or he can be a negative on offense, where you're just feeding him in the post 8 to 10 feet outside of the paint. You know, in terms of like demanding the ball, like you said, David, he doesn't really fight. He's not a guy that fights for position to get like 4 to 6 feet. He just kind of settles wherever he's at, and that's created a lot of issues for him. And so, yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, I'd like to just see him become more physical in general, but I think if we utilize his strengths as opposed to specifically kind of focusing on his weaknesses, then I think that we would get the most value out of him. I do think, personally, it'd be really nice if he could develop one more post move, just a secondary move. I mean, obviously he goes to the hook shot and it doesn't look bad. It's not a janky looking hook shot. Obviously he does it too much and at bad positions on the floor, but if he could have a secondary move, if the hook shot doesn't work, turn around, hook shot, maybe spin move or a drop step or something of the sort, I think that would be incredible. And I think he has the ability to do that.
Quick question. Yeah. Have you ever seen Andre Drummond do an up and under? Have you ever seen him fake the hook and then actually bring it in and corral it and take a step in and do like you know, get a layup to the rim or get a closer shot to the basket where it's going to be a bit more effective? Have you ever actually seen him do that move?
No, he doesn't have a secondary move ever.
It's insane to me. It's like, this is you, they know you're doing it, so you pretty much cemented the fact that that's what the defense is going to believe that you're going to shoot, but you don't have a single secondary move. Where that's a pretty big concern for me as a fan that you know, and someone that follows the team, is that, I don't know, it just seems strange.
You're getting that many touches in the post and you only have one move. You only have one move and you're getting a lot of touches. And there's a lot of comparisons to his abilities of like DeAndre Drummond. DeAndre Drummond isn't getting touches.
DeAndre Jordan?
DeAndre Jordan. Yeah, that guy. I just kind of fused
the two
together.
I would love to see a DeAndre Drummond. That's kind of what I want.
I want DeAndre Drummond. I want DeAndre defense and Drummond rebounding and, you know.
Neither of their free throws. That's a loss.
I wouldn't mind just having DeAndre Jordan for the hell of it. I don't really care. DeAndre Drummond.
That's funny.
You said it once and I was like, he's not going to say it again.
Yeah. It just kind of came
just
out.
Just let it go. Just let it go.
Cool,
and then like the second time you had to jump on him.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's actually the first time I've ever
said
that.
Confusing the viewers or the listeners. I didn't want them to start like Googling DeAndre Drummond.
There's got to be some Google images out there of a DeAndre Drummond fused
player. Go ahead and make one. You can get your Photoshop on. All right, Joe, what were you going to say though? DeAndre Jordan?
Yeah, he's not getting post touches.
No,
because he doesn't have much of a polished offensive game, and DeAndre, or now it's a trigger. So now Andre Drummond, you know, he has a little bit of an offensive game, but it's not much more than DeAndre Jordan. So I just don't see the reason why you would force feed that. And I agree. I think just his overall offensive awareness just needs to improve in terms of passing out of the paint. But yeah, we didn't even talk.
I want to jump around on this for Shamik. I want to jump around on our little doc here and just ask a quick question. So we've talked about a couple things just now. We talked about, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope taking next steps and what he needs to do to become, you know, more refined. You've talked about you want to see, you know, possibly moving on from Baines, bringing on, you know, Reggie Jackson. I think that that's not necessarily a bad idea because at the very least you might be able to amplify his trade value from where it is now, which is, you know, essentially in the sewer. You know, we talked a little bit more about Andre Drummond refining his game a little bit and becoming a better, you know, with shot selection and whatnot. What do you see, Shamik, as being off-season needs that the Pistons are going to target, whether that be in free agency? Not that we're going to have a lot of money to play around with. We have a lot of these guys on the books, like John Lohr and Ish Smith, you know, for at least a couple more years, Boban, in the draft as well. Where do you see the Pistons targeting players or positions, and not necessarily what does it mean for like the roster completely, who starts where, who starts when, you know, who's coming off the bench first, not that kind of stuff, but just in general, who do you see them bringing into the organization that they need for a more effective team next year?
Well, I think the two main avenues that I really see them adding to this team are through the draft and through signings. I'm not sure if trades are really feasible with how capped out we are. I'm not sure if any team will want to trade with us, to be honest. But let's address the draft first. With the draft, from where we're going to pick, it's going to be in the 9 through 12 range or around that, you know, just like the bottom end of the lottery. And those kind of players, they typically don't contribute right away. If you look at Henry Ellenson, he's an example of a person who was drafted in that range, and he's a little bit raw, and that's why they fall to that range.
KCP is another example.
KCP, yep. Stanley Johnson too, I think, was pretty. He's still pretty raw in terms of his skills, but I think in terms of the draft, I would like to see them just upgrade at whatever position they can. I mean, they just grab whatever the best player available is, regardless of position, just because where they're drafting, they're not going to grab one of those top 4 or 5 point guards that are heralded as, you know, the, you know, next 5 best point guards in the league.
Fultz, Ball, Fox. Dennis Smith Jr., Fox, yeah. And then, you know, obviously the guys like Josh Jackson, who's from Detroit, you know, he'll be off the board.
Yeah.
A Miles Bridges might be available around that point. I see him going in the top 10, so there's could be a possibility. I know that probably perks up a lot of the Michigan State faithful out there that are, you know, interested in him being on the Pistons. But so you're saying that you want to see them draft the most ready to play type of player that's also a good talent at that spot, or you're saying just get, you know, best available, can be really, really raw, but just best available player, you just pick him up? Or you're saying most ready to play but also strong player, obviously, if you're in the top 10.
I guess what I'm saying is that don't be locked down by a position. Like, let's say, you know, point guard is a need that we need in the offseason for whatever reason. Don't pass up a good power forward or a center because you want that point guard. Just draft whoever is best at that position. If somebody falls, great. If somebody doesn't, just draft whoever the best person is at wherever we're drafting.
And I think what would you say is the biggest point? Where do you think if you were to say that you were drafting based on your biggest need internally, what do you think that is for the Pistons? So who do you think, what type of player would you hope would fall? Not necessarily a name, but position that the Pistons would be able to scoop up in like the perfect, you know, best case scenario.
Best case scenario, like a knockdown, lights out 2 guard, backup 2. That's what I would want. That's on my wish list for the offseason. But with how capped out we are, I don't see that really happening unless it's some aging vet, which it brings.
But you're talking about in free agency then. I was talking about in the draft.
Well, yeah. I mean, either one. Just somebody who can shoot the ball consistently you know, lights out. That's who I would want. But, you know, I would really
those
take
guys are
anybody.
Expensive.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe, did you have any thoughts on that? Or
no, I pretty much agree with him. I think that I don't think we need to be locked down with the position in this draft. I think if for some reason the ping pong balls fell in our favor and we could move up a little bit, I'm grabbing one of those point guards.
Yep.
I think there's been people sort of fantasizing about De'Aaron Fox dropping to us. It's not going to happen. He's just too damn skilled.
I've seen De'Aaron Fox mentioned in my mentions about the Pistons and like next steps and stuff like 20 times. It's like, guys, he's gonna be a top 5 pick. I don't know where you think we're drafting, but we're really gonna be lucky if we get into that you know, that top 5.
So, yeah, no, he's getting scooped happening. Up
we have to so be incredibly
I agree.
Lucky
yeah yes. I hope so, you know. It'd be nice because the Pistons have drafted in this range too many times in the last 10 years, the Greg Monroe's.
And they've done well, too.
They've done decently well, yeah. But, like, the Greg Monroe's and the Brandon Knights.
That was Joe Dumars also drafting them. That wasn't Sam Van Gundy. I mean, Joe Dumars was great at the draft. Obviously not Darko, but he did do really, really good at that, you know, 7 to 12 range. Mm-hmm.
Monroe yeah, was a good player. I mean, he was a double-double sure. machine.
Yeah. I agree. He was great. And so was Andre Drummond. You know, he was 10, and then KCP was 8. Like, these are all really solid players
yep.
in the league.
But what you do see, not... what you do see with the Pistons right now is they need, like, another, like, the next level of player. So we kind of have those, I guess, sort of fringe all-star capable players, but we need a really dynamic guy. Ideally, point guard. I mean, for me, if you could scoop one of those guys up, and that's going to be in the 1 to 5 range. So we've done really well in like the 9 to 12 range. I think we've maximized the potential there. Again, that's fantasizing to think that you could even move up in the top 5 right now. But I agree with Shamik, and I think that they just you pick the best player available. There's not an area of need, and there isn't like a lights out shooter that would maybe fall to 9 to 12, who I could just really see making a big impact for us next year. But I think that's also our biggest area of need is shooting. I mean, you mm-hmm. see like the inconsistencies with the Marcus Morrises in the, you know, Kentavious Caldwell Popes, even though he's gotten better, the Stanley Johnsons. I'm just sick of the 3 for 12s and the 1 for 7s in the stat sheet consistently popping up. And we were supposed to be a shooting team. Like that's how Stan Van Gundy sets it up. So I think that in any way, shape, or form, maybe in, I don't know, an Anthony Moreau or some sort of player that can just actually give you a couple quick three-pointers, and that might be all he does. Like, I don't care. We just need people to make those shots.
Yeah, completely agreed.
What do you think, dude?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. It's just, I don't know, it just kind of becomes disheartening at a certain point where it's, you know, we've been talking about spacing, not necessarily on this podcast, but just if you followed the Pistons and covered the Pistons over the past 3 to, you know, I mean, I guess it even goes back further than that, but for me at least, you know, post Jay Smoove era, it's still an issue is the spacing. So that's something where, you know, I it's just kind of disheartening because the shooting, everyone knows that in the league nowadays. Pistons have about some of the, like, maybe the least amount of spending money that they can play around with this season, in this offseason. So, you know, I think we're definitely going to be, you know, I think what the Pistons are going to have to do is target some guys in the D League and really start to think about some guys that are, you know, fringe NBA players that might be lighting it up down there, and really kind of hoping you hit on someone like that, you know, might not be, they're not going to be as raw as a rookie. They're going to have professional basketball under their belt, so these guys are ready to step in. Now, if they hit their shots and can stick on a team, that's one thing. But I just don't see an avenue, unless we get really, really lucky in this draft, where we're going to be able to supplement the needs that we have that we have on this team. So that's just kind of my issue, is that I don't necessarily see the avenue where we get this player.
What
so
do you
I
guys,
think it has to be something like a D-League player or something, or someone from Europe.
Yeah, know, on that D-League note, obviously he hasn't played much this year as a rookie, but he has some of those skills that we've discussed us needing, specifically shooting. Henry Ellenson, he's young. He can shoot. He's talented. Obviously, he needs to get an NBA body. Do you see him... I mean, he's not going to be... A lot of second-year players aren't taking trips to the D-League as consistently as they do in you know, their rookie year. And that's not going to happen with them next year. do you still see him as a guy that just gets garbage minutes next year? Or do you think that maybe if he shows up in training camp and is hitting shots, that he could get some serious play and make a difference?
I mean, it's really hard to tell, because I feel like the reason why Henry Ellenson isn't playing right now is because defensively he is a huge liability. I mean, he would get bullied inside by, you know, opposing centers and power forwards, and he would really be a problem defensively. But his offense is awesome. I mean, he's in the D-League, he's averaging 18 and 9 rebounds and a block per game, which is fantastic. Can't ask for anything else. And at 6'11 and 20 years old, I mean, he's an awesome prospect, and really a blessing that he fell to us last year.
I think we overlooked,
he was 17.
We overlooked his abilities and in his impact that he can have on the Pistons.
Yeah, there just wasn't an avenue. Like, who was he going to play over, you know, actually when it was crunch time and when it was the Pistons were still actually
a team. No, he wasn't going to play this playoffs. Year. He had no chance to play this year.
Yeah, he fell to Detroit, and he was, you know, 17 points per game as a freshman at Marquette. You know, it's not like he was playing at some buster school. One thing that I think, and one of the fellow writers at Detroit Bad Boys, was him and I were tweeting back and forth about this yesterday. Justin Lambergusti. Sorry, Justin, your last name's kind of strange to spell. But anyways, he was saying, like, get him in now. Like, the season's a wash. Like, I don't see an issue. Like, I don't, like, who cares if the Pistons lose by 20 their next game? You already lost by 30 to the Magic. So when you needed to win. So at this point, like, why not just see what he can do on the offensive side of the floor? Give him 10 minutes of run and, you know, see what happens. You know, just see, give him some real playing time, so he'll have a baseline of, this is what I need to work on next season. Even if it is him just getting bullied and bullied and bullied, maybe that's kind of sends a message home to him where it's like, no, I really do have to bulk up. I really do have to take this stuff seriously. Not so much like, all right, I'll get my time next year and we'll see what happens. Just throw him out there now. Throw him out to the lines now. It's not going to hurt him at this point, in my opinion.
And if he hits some shots, then he can build some confidence going into next season.
And I think he will, too. So, he played pretty well when he got some run earlier in the season. You know, I think it was, I think when he was in Milwaukee, he played. Then also when, maybe when the Bucks came to town as well, early in the season, he got some run and he played pretty well and was hitting some big shots. So I don't see the issue with that. And you're right, Joe. He is someone on our bench who does have the skill set. That's why we drafted him, is because he can shoot.
We've thrown this idea around and Inside the Cylinder dropped a poll on Twitter, and there's a lot of differing opinions on this. So for you, Shamik, three players on the Pistons roster that you keep for the future, who are those three guys and why?
Well, I'll go in order of importance. I think the first guy is Tobias Harris. I think he's shown tons of progress this year compared to last. I mean, he was talked about as the most improved candidate early on, and his ISO, you know, back to the basket situations, he's almost money all the time on those. And he's been the one guy this year who's been pretty consistent throughout the entire year, whether he's in the bench or in the starting lineup. He's been pretty solid. And defensively, I know people like to, you know, criticize his defense, but I think it's better than most people would think. And then also think he has a lot of room to grow. He's only 24 years old. I think his three-point shooting can be a little bit better than what it is right now. And I get made fun of this for this hot take quite a bit in our piston-powered circles, but I would consider him a poor man's KD at best. At his, like, complete best, his ceiling, he could be a poor man's KD.
Hot take. I won't go that far. Yeah, I the thing is, it's not that he doesn't have, like, the upside of – he doesn't have the upside of the KD, but – the one thing I would say is just that I've never seen a player like Kevin Durant. That's the one thing. Like, he can get his shot whenever the hell he wants to get his shot. But I do see – one thing that I do see that's similar with Kevin Durant in Tobias Harris is that Tobias Harris finishes at the rim really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
He in traffic. Like, he's our one guy that will dunk on some dudes other than Andre Drummond on, like, a lob or something like that. But he's not scared to take it to the rack pretty hard. He's one of our better free throw shooters. He's got a back-to-the-basket game. he has an ability, and he has shown the ability to space the floor, and he can drive. So I do see the sense of the Kevin Durant comparison in the sense that he has a lot of aspect, a lot of offensive game in him.
Well, he can bring the ball up the floor, too. Players.
Yeah, he can bring the ball up the floor. Yeah. I think he's – yeah, I think that – I would say that, and that's – yeah, I mean, poor man, sure. I guess it's not too far.
At his best, yeah. Though, like at his complete – like if he reaches his ceiling, I think he could be a poor man's KD. He could be a 20-point scorer, maybe 6-7 rebounds a game, you know, minimum.
So he's your number one. Who's your number two?
KCP. I mean, we already talked about his impact on the game earlier in the podcast, but – I think he also has the ability to grow a little bit more with his shot. His defense is really helps his team out. I mean, whoever we face, he's the guy with the hardest task. Whether, you know, like last year it was when Golden State came to town, he was tasked with guarding Steph Curry. And I think Steph still ended up dropping 40 or 30 or something on us.
That'll happen.
But it's Steph Curry, and I believe we ended up winning that game. So, I mean, KCP has been pretty good with defense. And then it was really hard for me to choose the third one. I was bouncing between Stanley Johnson and Andre Drummond, but I ended up selecting Henry Ellenson. And for exactly the reasons that we talked about.
Dang.
You just back on his chair. I thought the fact that we got 3 minutes or 4 minutes into Henry Ellenson content was
I like it. Awesome. We need more Henry Ellenson content.
This is go ahead, Shamik, please.
I mean, if he adds weight and strength in the offseason, his defense can get better. I mean, I saw some natural ability to defend. He has the ability to protect at that height and that athleticism. The way he moves his feet and, you know, finds open shots, and he's a pure scorer, and I think he really could be something special. And he's only 20 years old, too. So I mean,
have you seen how much Grand Rapids drives have you seen?
Not much, but when he comes up to Detroit and plays the 5-6 minutes, he's pretty dominant in the times that he is playing.
Oh man, we might be looking back on this 2-3 years from now and being like, well, like, Shamik is he's a wizard of sorts. He had a crystal ball. No, that's great.
I think it's interesting. David, are you still Andre?
Sure, yeah, we haven't said ours yet.
Well, we haven't passed episodes, but it changes.
You go first, Joey.
I'm really struggling now with this. I really like Henry Ellenson too. I'm not going to say him. I'm not going to say him, but I really like him. I think he's going to have
is he like 3B or 3C? Like
he's
going to
have a really good career. Well, I mean, it's a toss up. I really like Stanley Johnson too and Andre Drummond. I think one guy for sure is KCP. I don't think that's debatable.
So your one is KCP.
One is KCP.
Now who's two and three?
I would throw Drummond in there just because I think that if you surround him with the right guys with the right mentality, that he can adopt that and he can play within a system. And if you use him the right way, then, you know, again, there's only two or three guys that can do what you can do. So I'd go KCP, Andre Drummond. And then honestly, I don't want to go Stanley Johnson, but I might go. I'm gonna go Stanley Johnson for now. What about you?
I've almost convinced you. I'm close to convincing you, Henry.
I'm almost
Ellenson.
There, man.
For me, I'm gonna go one being Andre Drummond, strictly because I think I do think he's the best rebounder in the planet. I do see the way that on the defensive side, or even when the Pistons are on offense. He is such a problem for guys down low. It's really, you can just see it all over their faces on opposing centers and four. The amount of times that Andre Drummond gets a rebound over three dudes is often. He is a vacuum when it comes to everything down there. So I just have never seen a player really like that. So I think that just for the fact that that's all world skill, no one really has that kind of ability other than maybe a DeAndre Jordan. But other than that, I would say those are the only two guys in the league that really have that. Even more so than a Rudy Gobert or something like that. Two, I would go... I'm going to say Tobias Harris as two, because he, for all the reasons I just said, really complete game, really special player in the sense of... I really don't want to be the team that passes on Tobias Harris again and then I see him playing for the Rockets down the road or something like that, and he's just balling out, like, getting championships. Like, I really don't want that to be our story, especially because we already know what he can do. It's not like he's a project and unfinished. It's like, you know what he has. You should definitely keep him. And three, I'm going to go KCP as well. Just for the fact of, you know, I think it is all-world defense. You said it, Shamik. You know, he's guarding everyone from Steph Curry to last night's game. He was guarding Giannis in the crunch. So that was one thing where you don't really have too many guys that can do that. And I think the three will definitely find its way down the hole. So, yeah, and Stanley, I want to say you, but it's really difficult just because you just haven't seen too much growth. Not that I'm saying won't be there, but it's just not enough for me to say him right now.
Fair.
Well, all right. Well, I think that wraps it up for us. Shamik Mohile from Piston Power, he joined us. And, you know, obviously, thanks to Shamik. Thanks for being patient with us through all this stuff and coming on. This time, we're actually get you out to the airwaves. just plug yourself one more time. Where can people find you? Where they can find you on Twitter and all that good stuff.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure, you know, coming on the pod and spewing my hot takes. But yeah, you can read my articles at pistonpower.com, and you can follow me on Twitter, ShamShamGod.
Give him a follow, for sure. And you know, go hop over to Inside the Cylinder, give us a follow. You don't have to follow me or Joe. We're not that interesting. great. Awesome. Thanks for coming on, Shamik. And yeah, we'll definitely have you on again, and hopefully we'll be talking about blue skies and green pastures and all that good stuff.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right, well, take care.
All right, take care. Thanks, guys.
Bye. All right, bye.